So I'm talking right now with Andrew Hussey, who wrote a book that is called Speaking East, The Strange and Enchanted Life of Isidore Issou. And we want to talk a little bit about this book and about Isidore Issou. And first of all, I'd like to know, how came the idea to write this book for you? What was the reason for you to work on Isidore Issou?
Well, the reason was that I was writing a completely different book at the end of the 1990s, which was a biography of Guy Debord, which people probably know as the author of The Society of the Spectacle and the leader of the Situationist International. And, you know, Guy Debord is pretty famous now, certainly in the Anglo-American world, because of his influence on the events of May 68 in Paris and on punk rock, Sex Pistols, Malcolm McLaren, and ultimately Factory Records in Manchester, and even the KLF and the rave scene in Britain in the early 90s. So Debord was a big figure in lots of ways in the Anglo-American world. And my biography was to take him back to his French origins. And of course, I had to speak to Isidore Issou, who was Debord's great friend at the end of the 1940s, early 50s. In fact, you know, there was a kind of love between them. Issou was kind of Debord's mentor. But when I met Issou, he was very old, he was very ill, and he absolutely hated Debord. So when I started to talk to him about Debord, I did an interview with Issou. He just came out with all of this, you know, calling Guy Debord a Nazi and so on. And we got to the sort of center of all of this. And the important thing about it was that Issou was Jewish, very, very Jewish, and in the sense he was quite religious, and he had suffered at the hands of the Iron Guard in Bucharest in the 1940s. He was almost killed, and a lot of his ideas came from that experience. He was 17 at the time, and it scarred him for life. So, you know, calling someone a Nazi for Isidore Issou was a very powerful insult. So the idea came to me of unraveling the life, the strange and enchanted life of this very difficult but fascinated figure who historically is very important on the avant-garde, but I think for a long time has been overlooked.
So you were just talking about the Jewish background of Isidore Issou when we talk about his life. He came from Romania. He was born 1925 in Botoșani as Isidore Goldstein. What can you say about his family? What was shaping to him in his childhood?
His childhood was, Botoșan was one of those, it wasn't quite a shtetl, but it was a large Jewish population. It had a sort of like a very important cosmopolitan Jewish culture. There was a good library, there were good bookshops, and, you know, there was very, very politically active communism and so on. Issou's family was very solidly bourgeois, and Issou received a very solidly bourgeois education. And I think it was Botoșan was a kind of like paradise for Issou as a child, a paradise which was destroyed with the outbreak of the Second World War, and the family moved to Bucharest, and they moved to Bucharest to avoid the pogroms that were happening in the East. But what they found in Bucharest was that anti-Semitism and anti-Semitic violence was also part of daily life. And in fact, you know, in 1941 there was an atrocious pogrom in Bucharest, and Issou was caught up in this. He was almost killed. It was a devastating offense, and it had a devastating effect on his mind. And this is where he came up with the idea of lettrism. Now, I'm talking about the Jewishness of his background, and this is a very difficult thing to talk about because I found it hard to understand. But lettrism is not just an art movement. It's almost like a religion. In fact, it is a kind of religion. And at the head of the religion is Issou. And Issou thought of himself as the Jewish Messiah, that he was going to save the world with this new philosophy, this revolutionary new poetry that he called lettrism. Now, that sounds kind of mad, but the logic behind it is that when Issou was attacked in 1941 and nearly killed, he was, as it were, almost resurrected. He survived. And lots of Jews didn't. Lots of Jews didn't survive the Second World War, indeed. And he saw himself as someone who was going to judaiser l'Europe. He was going to make Europe Jewish in the sense that he would lead the way for a new kind of humanity, which would be Jewish humanity. And the logic is that, you know, very simple. It's not simple. It's quite complicated. But to survive such a terrible, terrible event, you have to live again as a kind of messiah. So The title of the book, Speaking East, is a story of two things, or maybe three things. First of all, it's the fact that Isidore Isou, as a very important part of the Western avant-garde, that's to say the link between Dada, Surrealism and Situationism, doesn't come from the West. He comes from the East. And the second important point is that, you know, Isou actually comes from the Jewish East, the Jewish Orient. And what he brings are a lot of ideas, language, techniques, which have their origins in Eastern Europe, the Jewish Eastern Europe, which, you know, in a kind of subconscious way, not subconscious, but a kind of occulted way, have influenced the activities of later avant-garde groups like the Situationists, ultimately right down to punk rock.
Mm-hmm. So you just talked about how central and how important for Isou was the experience to be almost killed, to be a witness of anti-Semitic pogroms in Bucharest, and just to survive this, and to know what is anti-Semitism. And there's a point that is connected with this, I think, and I found it very interesting when I read your book to see that Isidore Isou was in touch with some Zionist groups in Romania, and that he discussed different Zionist ideas, and that he maybe developed a very own version of Zionism. What can you say about this? What was Isou thinking about the idea to find a new country for the Jewish people also after his own experiences?
Well, you've explained it very well. His initial literary and political education was with very important Zionist groups in Romania and very important Jewish intellectuals. And his Zionism was total. He was a complete believer in Zionism as a young man, and as you've indicated, what really happened was that he wanted to go to Palestine. He set off to go to Palestine, and he didn't get there, and it was a disappointment. And he started to think of a new way of conceiving a homeland for the Jewish people. And he was always a kind of, his parents moved to Israel, his sister moved to Israel, and he made many visits to Israel after the war, and he was, you know, very enthusiastic about Israel as a project, but not so much as his own project, which was to create a diasporic homeland for the Jews, if such a thing can be imagined, which was an international community, if you like, of, how can I put it, an international floating homeland for the Jews, that the whole world would be Jewish rather than one tiny part of a country. So that he aimed, if you like, at a kind of a mass internationalization of his ideas. I'm struggling to explain that, but partly because it is such a big and complex idea and slightly mad idea, but it's in the origins of really everything that drives him artistically and politically, the belief that he will find the true Israel, that he will find the true promised land, but it won't necessarily be part of the Middle East.
So then after 1945, he hated Romania and he hated the Christian world and he wanted to leave Romania. And then he had the plan to go to Paris with a kind of a messianic mission, as you told. So he had the idea that he would revolutionize the whole culture and to found a new language. And this is what he called lettrism. How could you explain this? What is lettrism? What did the lettrist movement want?
Well, I said before, lettrism is like surrealism. I mean, a lot of people think surrealism is a simple art movement and so on. And it affects art and it affects poetry and it affects politics. But it's not, you know, we talk about La Religion, so at least the surrealist religion. It's a way of being. It's a way of being human. And I would start defining lettrism with its biggest ambition, which is to find a new way of being human. And that's a big idea which supersedes everyday politics, which supersedes art, which supersedes poetry, music, whatever it is. And even sexual relations, relationships between men and women, everything in terms of our relationship to the whole world. Eventually, as you came up with the idea of a philosophy called cladology, which was to master everything through the prism of lettrism. Now, I'm going to stop there and say that lettrism begins in details. It begins in poetry, and it begins in the invention of a new language. And Isou, it was an illumination, he called it an illumination, that came to him in Bucharest, which he took with him to Paris, was to find the new world, to find the new world that the Messiah that Isu would take us to, we needed a new language. And, you know, having been deeply steeped in French literature, he took his cue from Dada and Surrealism, and earlier the Symbolists and Baudelaire and so on. And the idea was that poetry, if we start with poetry, the language could never express the real meaning of experience. So to do that, we had to find a new language. And the purpose or the mission of the young lettriste was to find that new language, literally to write new alphabets, to write new sounds. And all of these sounds, alphabets, this sound poetry, would supersede the linguistic limits of a nation. So that, you know, if you're French and spoke French and you were French because you spoke French, then that would be superseded. But if you're German, spoke German, and you're German because you spoke German, then this new language would offer you a new kind of cosmopolitanism, a way out of the straitjacket of nation states, which Isu thought responsible for the catastrophes of the First World War and the Second World War. So that lettrism was, you can say it's actually a directly political response to historical events. But like Surrealism, the historical response is not one of straightforward politics. It's more a kind of Achilleastic, I like that word, Achilleast, who wants to change the world by revolution. Everything, turning everything on its head.
So this would be the right point to ask some more questions. So what was the effect of lettrism in after-war Paris? What did the lettrists think about youth and revolution? Which connection they had to Guy Debord and the later Situationists? Which influence did lettrism have to the revolt of 1968 and so on? But I think this is also a good point to coming to an end here and just ask you about your presentation on Thursday in Weimar. So on 8th of June, you will be guest at the ACT Gallery in Weimar and you will present your book about Isidore Isu. What is your plan for this evening? What will you talk about there?
Well, what I'm going to do, I'm going to make an informal presentation based around the theme of a beginner's guide to Isidore Isu and lettrism, because I'm guessing that the audience will maybe know the name of lettrism, and certainly they will know things like punk rock and British youth culture of the late 20th century and so on. I'm sure they'll know about Situationism and Guy Debord. But I would like to, as a group in some ways, to find a way of linking all of these things together. So my starting point will be this, that aside from the messianic, religious, political stuff, which is all important, Isu had one very big idea which influenced a whole generation or several generations. And I think he was the first to do it. He was that original. And his idea was this, that youth is a revolutionary force. And that, you know, think about it, up until 1945, up until the Second World War, youth had always been submissive in obedience to the adult world or disregarded and disregarded. Now, Isu had grown up in Bucharest as what was termed an hooligan in Romanian. These were proto-punk rockers, if you like, who into delinquency and violence and general negative behavior. But there was a meaning to this as well. It was to negate the culture around them. And when he got to Paris, Isu formed a small group of young people, and their idea was that revolution, the leftist revolution, would take over the world. And in a sense, it did, but not in the way that is originally intended. But it was a revolutionary moment to think of that youth could change the world. And this was the flame, this was the match that lit the flame, that led the way for May 68, because May 68, historically, the most important thing about it as a revolution was that it wasn't a revolution led by the proletarian classes. It was a revolution led by youth. And I think that's what took us right through to punk rock. That's what took us through to British youth culture at the end of the 20th century. So there's a kind of, if you like, a secret history of the end of the 20th century, which Isidore Isu kicks off with that idea.